Hello everybody and welcome to this week's recording of the Wallingford District Talking Newspaper. We're going to be reading articles from the Wallingford Herald, published on Wednesday, November the 5th, 2025. At the end of the paper, which will conclude on the sport, we're going to read a couple of weeks look ahead from our local events diary. And then following that, you'll hear some articles from the local monthly magazines, which we're going to add in on the end. Our three readers this evening are Sue White, Jill Farrow and Alec Hayton. Your copier is Roger Scammell and producer myself, Lawrence.
Hello, this is Alec. The first article, Brunel Descendant Visits Railway Centre. Volunteers at Didcot Railway Centre enjoyed a visit from a direct descendant of Isambard Kingdom Brunel. Jim Noble, who lives in Oxford, is the great-great-grandson of Brunel. The famous 19th century engineer who built the Great Western Railway, and Mr. Noble called in for a visit to the centre on Sunday. Brunel built the broad gauge railway of 7 feet compared with the standard gauge of 4 feet 8 and a half. The broad gauge railway was all converted to the narrow gauge by 1892, but the rail centre has a section of broad gauge line and a replica locomotives from the 1840s. Mr. Noble took a close look at the broad gauge locomotive Iron Duke, an 1847 design that travelled from London to Didcot in 47 minutes, an average of 67 miles an hour. He also examined an earlier broad gauge design, the Firefly, from 1840. The volunteers were delighted that Mr. Noble also took an interest in the project to rebuild the Hayford Station building on the site. This Brunel design dates from the opening of the railway from Oxford to Banbury in September 1850 and was then taken apart stone by stone in the 1980s, although Hayford Station remains open.
Warning over fireworks used illegally. Police in Oxfordshire has said careless and illegal firework use can cause serious damage, as they warn people that setting them off could lead to prosecution. Thames Valley Police's neighbourhood policing team for Didcot and Wallingford issued a major warning on the dangers of careless or unregulated firework use. The plea was issued ahead of Bonfire Night tonight, Wednesday, with firework displays planned for the week. Police said that, as well as having the potential to cause serious injuries, including burns and blindness, trigger distress in vulnerable people, terrify pets and wildlife, or lead to fires and property damage, the use of fireworks outside of specific terms can lead to hefty penalties. Setting off fireworks between 11 p.m. and 7 a.m, except on permitted nights, is an offence, as is using fireworks in public places like streets or parks. Offences also include selling or giving fireworks to anyone under 18, possessing professional-grade fireworks without a licence, or causing harm or a nuisance with the pyrotechnics. Penalties can include unlimited fines, up to 6 months in prison, and £90 on-the-spot fines issued by police. A spokesperson for Thames Valley Police said, "As Bonfire Night approaches, we want everyone in our communities to enjoy the celebration safely and legally."
Hello, I'm Sue. Drugs seized and poachers arrested. Drugs were seized from villages and poachers were arrested on a busy night for the police. On Wednesday night, Thames Valley Police's Rural Crime Unit said it took two men into custody for alleged poaching offences in North Aston. A spokesperson for the force said, They were stopped on a rural lane and found to have lurchers, lamps, thermal imaging and a dead rabbit. They were interviewed and have been bailed pending further inquiries. In addition, the task force said it had found cannabis on a man during the same night in Chiltern. A police spokesperson said, Police Constables Dollery and Boyden have searched a male in Chiltern under the Misuse of Drugs Act tonight with cannabis located. Please report anything suspicious to us on 101 or 999 in an emergency.
And now a sad item. The dead biker is named. The name of a motorcyclist who died following a crash in Cholsey last month has been confirmed at the inquest into his death. Vito José dos Cantos Figuera of Wallingford died on Saturday, September the 27th, after a crash between Wallingford and Cholsey. The 51-year-old, who was born in Lisbon, died at 5 p.m. on the same day of the crash, which took place at about lunchtime on Wallingford Road. Police reported at the time that he was riding a black Harley Davidson motorcycle and was involved in a crash as he overtook a black Audi A4.
Speeding offences. Speed cameras caught over 1,000 offences in Oxford this summer. The latest road safety data from Thames Valley Police shows that speed cameras captured 1,104 offences between April and June this year in Oxford City. Mobile speed units, meanwhile, caught slightly more, with 1,485 offences logged, based on 119 hours of police time.
Digital ID blocked. An Oxfordshire council has voted to formally oppose the government's plans for compulsory digital ID to UK residents. Under the scheme, digital IDs will be issued to all UK citizens and those who want to work in the UK as proof of identity to show the right to work with the aim of curbing illegal migration. The government will launch a public consultation on the plans by the end of 2025.
Calls for councils to tackle weeds on the pavements. There are growing concerns over overgrown weeds on Oxfordshire's pavements after the county council scrapped regular maintenance more than a decade ago. Huge weeds have become a feature of several pavements across the county, making it harder for people with mobility issues and pushchairs to get through and affecting the overall appearance of the streets. Oxfordshire County Council used to clear the weeds regularly as part of a programme, but this was shelved in 2007 financial year to save money. Some parish and town councils have organised their own weed cuts, but concerns have been raised about the use of glyphosate, which poses risks to health, rivers and biodiversity. Liberal Democrat councillor Nathan Lee, who represents Abingdon North, put forward a motion asking the council to look into reintroducing regular pavement weed clearance and for this to be considered in next year's budget. It also asks the council to look into supporting towns and parish councils, as well as offering guidance on alternatives to using chemical spraying. It's due to be discussed at the full council meeting next Tuesday, November the 4th. Mr. Lee said that the issue was one of the most common frustrations people raise. He said, after 15 years of funding cuts from central government, it's understandable that councils have had to make tough choices and focus on urgent priorities, which they are legally entitled to do, such as adult social care. But looking after the basics, such as keeping pavements clear, safe and attractive, makes a huge difference to how people feel about their neighbourhoods. Clean, cared-for streets help residents feel proud of where they live and they stop small problems turning into expensive highway repairs later. I know how strongly people feel about this because, like many councillors, I've spent time out with volunteers scraping and clearing weeds myself. The community spirit is brilliant, but it shouldn't have to depend on ad hoc efforts with hoes and brushes. We need a smarter, more sustainable and fairer countrywide approach. It's all about getting the fundamentals right.
Trail Scenic Landscapes to Inspire Contest. The Ridgeway National Trail Scenic Landscapes are set to inspire budding artists in a prestigious competition. The Swire Ridgeway Arts Prize 2026, organised by the Friends of the Ridgeway, is welcoming entries under the theme Shapes and Shadows of the Ridgeway. The competition, open to both professional and amateur artists, features four categories: wall art, photography, sculpture, and written work. Each category encourages artists to capture the unique beauty of the Ridgeway, a trail known for its historic and natural significance. The trail, stretching 87 miles from Overton Hill to Ivanhoe Beacon, is more than just a walking path. It is a historic monument, a source of artistic inspiration, and a distinctive natural environment. Entrants have until March the 20th, 2026, to submit their artwork, which must have been produced within the last 24 months. Entry forms and detailed competition guidelines can be obtained by emailing swireartsprize@gmail.com. The competition culminates in an exhibition of all entries on April the 18th and 19th, 2026, at the Thomas Hughes Memorial Hall in Uffington, with the prize-giving ceremony on Sunday, April the 19th. The Friends of the Ridgeway, a charity, has organised the Swire Ridgeway Art Prize since 2017 as part of its efforts to promote the Ridgeway's National Trail historic, artistic and environmental features.
Plans for 9 new homes are approved. Plans for 9 new homes proposed on a lane in Wallingford have been approved by the District Council's Planning Committee despite objections from neighbours. The second attempt at an application for 9 new homes in Queen's Avenue, Wallingford, has been successful, as outline planning application for the development was recommended for approval by South Oxfordshire District Council's most recent Planning Committee. It will go ahead despite objections from Wallingford Town Council, neighbours and locals in the town who raised concerns about traffic, overdevelopment and the impact on biodiversity. Comprised of 9 chalet-style homes, 3 pairs of two-storey semi-detached dwellings and 3 further detached chalet-style dwellings, the development will be on a site at the end of the residential road beyond Abbeyvale Vets car park. A previous application was refused by the District Council and dismissed by an inspector at appeal, but only because of the issue of amenity of future residents of Phase 5 of the Highcroft development, currently under construction to the northwest of the site. The issue involved Highcroft residents being overlooked by the large buildings proposed for Queen's Avenue, which have been amended by the applicant for the second attempt. South Oxfordshire District Council's planning officer, speaking in the planning committee meeting, said, "It's important to note that the previous appeal decision would have been allowed if it weren't for the concerns regarding the amenity of future occupants, with the inspector determining that the development was acceptable in terms of highway safety, access layout, drainage and tree loss. As well as being shortened to chalet-style dwellings, the plots, which would have overlooked the Highcroft, have been moved further away from the site boundary and will only have first floor windows on the north and east sides." Jake Collins, a planning consultant, speaking on behalf of applicant Gareth Bertram Limited, said, "The amendments significantly reduce the bulk of significantly reduce the physical presence, mass and bulk of these dwellings, and can be secured and controlled as such at reserved matters stage. The revised details fully address and overcome the single issue raised by the previous appeal inspector. Craig Wright, who also spoke at the meeting, is a neighbour to the development in Queen's Avenue and raised objections to the application. He said the lane would become overdeveloped with the addition of 9 dwellings, describing it as a crammed development with undersized gardens set out in a cul-de-sac layout in contrast to the existing grain of houses in the road. His objections join the nearly 90 comments submitted on the application of the Council's planning portal, including from Wallingford Town Council, which likewise said it was overdevelopment with undersized gardens and unacceptable traffic increases. I would like to add an addendum to this article. I was at the planning meeting on Wednesday of last week, and the plans were not approved because one of the councillors proposed a site visit to further examine the site, and this was carried by the council, and therefore the decision to approve the plans was deferred. Unless there has been some other planning discussions at the county council that we don't know about.
Reservoir rethink is needed as costs continue to rise. The government is being urged to rethink their decision to approve plans for the huge reservoir near Abingdon. It would cover the size somewhere in the region of the size of Gatwick Airport and is expected to provide water for about 15 million people. Campaign group Safer Waters and the CPRE Oxfordshire launched a judicial review against water management plan in June, which was unfortunately unsuccessful. Following this, Thames Water revealed the cost of building the reservoir could triple from £2.2 billion to between £5.5 and £7.5 billion. This was despite the company maintaining in the judicial review that the cost would remain at £2.2 billion. Vale of Whitehall's District Council debated a motion which urges the government to reconsider the decision given the increasing costs at their council meeting on Wednesday, 22nd of October. A total of 50 people attended the meeting in support of the motion when 8 people were registered to speak. Councillor Sarah James, the leader of the Green Group, who represents the Hendred, said, I've never seen so many residents at one of our meetings, and I'm grateful to everyone who came and to those especially who spoke. Thames Water have got a £2.2 billion reservoir through the process so far, and then just seemed able to whack the price up as high as they like with no further questions. People are angry and upset about the lack of accountability. Residents have no confidence in Thames Water's calculations. The cost effectiveness or otherwise of a £7.5 billion reservoir has never been considered, never mind weighed up against the alternative options such as water transfer schemes, because Thames Water did not reveal the eye-watering price until after the decisions were made. The motion was passed unanimously by the district councillors. On top of the increased cost of the building of the reservoir, the operating costs for the next 65 years are estimated to be £1.9 billion. Thames Water is launching a statutory consultation which will close in January next year. They will submit their application for planning consent to the government in August next year. If the scheme is granted, it's hoped that the building would start in 2029 and the reservoir would be operational from 2040. Neville Muncaster, Strategic Water Resources Director for Thames Water, said, "Working through the development process, we are applying lessons from other major projects in the UK. Whenever we are able, This has included providing an update on what we expect the reservoir to cost as early as possible and well before construction, when it becomes difficult to adapt to revisions.
Project shortlisted for Health Award. A sustainability project in healthcare has been recognised for its innovation. Oxford Health NHS Foundation Trust was shortlisted for the 2025 Nursing Times Award in the Sustainability in Nursing and Midwifery category for its community public health nurse-led project, Leave the Paper Behind, reducing the environmental impact of postal communication with service users. Deputy Chief Nurse Fletcher Angie said, "The evening was a powerful celebration of the dedication, innovation, and leadership shown by nurses across the country. Huge congratulations to Kirsty and Comfort for leading this impactful work. Being shortlisted is a major achievement, and to us, they are already winners for driving innovation and greener care. The project rethinks traditional postal communication methods to reduce environmental harm while maintaining patient-centered care." Although the Trust did not win the award, the team said being named a finalist was a significant honour. The Trust said, "This nomination is a powerful recognition of our commitment to embedding sustainability into healthcare, rethinking how we work to reduce our environmental impact while continuing to deliver compassionate, high-quality care. Being a finalist among such inspiring projects from across the UK is a true honour and a testament to the passion and dedication of our team."
Safety calls following death on A34. Calls have been made to make the A34 safer following the death of a teenager in a crash. A 19-year-old Ford Fiesta driver fatally struck a parked lorry on a lay-by during the early hours of Saturday, the 25th of October. Circumstances into the boy's death are ongoing with Thames Valley Police, and a cause is not yet known publicly. Matthew Barber, Police and Crime Commissioner for Thames Valley, has urged National Highways to look at how it can make the A34 safer by design. He said, "Any serious or fatal accident on our roads is a concern as road safety impacts all of us. It is too early to judge the specific cause of this particular tragic case in which a young man lost his life. We know that there are regular problems on the A34. In the most serious cases, these can lead to loss of life, but people will be familiar with almost daily delays. I must ask National Highways to explore ways to make the road safer by design." Mr. Barber said road safety forms a key part of his police and crime plan's priorities, which delivers a road safety strategy aiming for better road policing with the work of highway authorities such as National Highways. "As Police and Crime Commissioner, I will continue to work with both Thames Valley Police and our partners to ensure that residents see increased safety across the road network," he added. Notorious for serious incidents, last Saturday's crash was in fact the first fatal crash on the A34 through the Thames Valley area since March 2023, analysis by this newspaper shows. Between 2019 and March of this year, 16 crashes have been reported to the police, which are classed as serious, fatal, or slight injury. Oxfordshire County Council's Transport Cabinet member, Andrew Gant, was asked how he would like to see safety improved along the A34. He said, "The A34 is a highly strategic route for the whole nation and is heavily used by HDVs. There is understandably a long-standing debate about capacity and traffic flow on the road, and we all know the knock-on impact that can be experienced on the local road network. However, this debate cannot happen in isolation from safety considerations."
Misconduct hearing to start. a serving Thames Valley police officer, has been accused of gross misconduct after he touched a female colleague without consent. PC Nathan Budd, based at the force headquarters in Kidlington, will face a misconduct hearing. It is alleged that on November the 25th, 2022, the officer was at a social event with colleagues and consumed alcohol. And during the evening, PC Budd touched a female colleague without invitation or consent. The notice for the hearing said that if the allegations are proven, they would amount to gross misconduct and the constable's dismissal would be justified. A hearing will be held before a panel chaired by the Assistant Chief Police Officer Lucy Hudson at the Thames Valley Police HQ, is due to start today and last 5 days. Budd faced previous criminal proceedings for the same incident and was charged with sexual assault on a female over the age of 16. At the time, he was suspended from duty, but he's now understood that he's now still serving on the police force. Thames Valley Police have been approached for more information on the status of the proceedings.
Plan for new council that will reunite historic towns. A plan for West Berkshire to merge with councils in Oxfordshire, reuniting towns that used to be in the Royal County, is set to be put forward. Oxfordshire County Council will be abolished as the Labour government has ordered the elimination of two-tier local authorities through the local government reorganisation process. Soon, the five lower-tier councils in Oxfordshire will be deciding whether to divide the county into two, with Oxford and Shires Council covering the north and Ridgeway Council covering the south. If given the go-ahead, the Ridgeway Council would reunite towns that were historically part of Berkshire, such as Abingdon, Didcot and Wallingford, into the Royal County. The Uffington White Horse, a historic symbol of Berkshire, would also be reunited with West Berkshire, which contains Newbury, Thatcham, Hungerford and suburbs of Reading. The proposals for the division of Oxfordshire have been justified as it could tackle inefficiencies and improve services. Geoff Brooks, Liberal Democrats, the leader of West Berkshire Council, said, "It is important that though local government reorganisation, we deliver the best option for our residents. This proposal is about creating councils that are big enough to cope but small enough to care. It could save the most money of all the proposals and take a modern and innovative approach to service delivery, learning from our good work locally but also other areas. It will help us proactively tackle the financial challenges facing West Berkshire as a small unitary authority whilst preserving the character and communities we hold dear. The decision to divide Oxfordshire into two must be submitted to the Ministry of Local Government by the deadline of November the 28th. The news comes as villages near Reading could become part of a Greater Reading Council. Earlier this year, the Labour leadership of Reading Borough Council launched a separate proposal that would absorb Tilehurst Parish, Calcot, Thiel, Purley and Pangbourne into Reading Borough. It is stressed that these areas would retain parish councils, even though areas of Reading, such as Caversham and Whitley, do not have them. Mickey Leng, Labour, Deputy Leader of Reading Borough Council, said, "We have made clear that all seven of the existing parishes in the area would remain and would be welcomed into Reading as an integral part of our community governance arrangements, and I repeat that commitment." And there's a very nice picture of the Uffington White Horse.
Under the general title of Journalism Matters, the article is Local Titles Join Forces Against Secret Alcohol Licensing Plans. Local newspapers across the country are to run the same front page cover, calling on Prime Minister Keir Starmer and the Business Secretary Peter Kyle to abandon proposals to shroud the sale of alcohol in local communities in secrecy. Hundreds of weekly titles are to run the Defend Your Right to Know campaign, with daily local titles set to follow suit on Monday, coinciding with the launch of Journalism Matters, the industry's annual celebration of journalism. Many titles will also run homepage takeovers online. The joint front page is part of the local news sector's campaign against government proposals to remove the statutory requirement for alcohol licensing notices to be published in the local press. Newspapers, the plans are widely part of a review of the licensing regime in England and Wales. The front page ad explains why the government's plans risk shrouding local communities in secrecy and urges readers to respond to the licensing reform consultation, which closes at midday next Thursday. NewsQuest Chief Executive Henry Walker said, local papers are a crucial platform to ensure that local residents can easily see public notices, including alcohol licensing notices, in the highly trusted environment of independent local journalism. In addition to running a paper, the notices appear on local news websites and on public notice portals, which has been developed with funding and expertise from the Google News Initiative. The notices are often covered editorial by local journalists, ensuring that even greater reach for the public. As we approach the start of this year's Journalism Matters campaign, our clear message to the Prime Minister is to back local journalism by keeping alcohol licensing notices in the local papers. Baylis Community Media Chief Executive and Chair of the New Media Association's Independent Publishers Forum, Jeremy Spooner, said, "Alcohol licensing notices are not red tape. They are a means for local communities to engage meaningfully with plans to sell alcohol in their local area. Removing alcohol licensing notices from local papers will do nothing to help either the pubs or the papers. Instead, it will deal a hammer blow to local democratic engagement. Just at a time when the government is seeking to decentralise power from Westminster, there is still time for ministers to abandon this ill-conceived plan and instead focus on pro-growth interventions that will deliver genuine benefits to the local British businesses which power our local economies."
Police make pledge after violent stalker is jailed. Police have made a pledge after a violent Oxfordshire stalker was jailed. Speaking after Daniel New was sentenced to 3 years and 9 months in prison, Detective Constable Michael Hopcroft said police will listen, investigate fully and take every action possible to safeguard people against offenders. From October 2024 to June 2025, New of Besselsway Blueberry carried on a campaign of stalking the victim, a woman in her 20s. He persistently made phone calls and sent messages, repeatedly attending her property and refusing to leave, as well as parking outside and observing the property. On May the 24th, New attended her property and assaulted her by pressing a lit cigarette against her forehead, causing a burn injury. That same day, he was arrested and charged for stalking and assault. In June, New contacted the victim and offered £2,000 to try to get her to drop the charging, breaching his bail conditions. He was later arrested and charged on the 23rd of July for perverting the course of justice, and he remained in custody until his sentencing date. D.C. Hopcroft said, "I applaud the victim for her continued support and for helping us to bring New to justice after he had such a negative influence on her life for so long. Domestic abuse isn't acceptable, and I hope this conviction and the custodial sentence shows other victims that police will listen, investigate fully, and take every action possible to safeguard them against offenders." New pleaded guilty to one count each of stalking, involving serious alarm and distress, and assault by beating on the 29th of September at Oxford Magistrates Court. He had previously pleaded guilty to one count of perverting the course of justice on the 22nd of August at Oxford Crown Court. On October the 27th, he was sentenced to 3 years and 9 months in prison at Oxford Crown Court.
Artist draws alphabet of landmarks in hometown. An artist from Wallingford has created an artistic map of the town featuring an A to Z of drawn landmarks and events. Claire Cross, 53, born and raised in Wallingford but living in Abingdon, took on the challenge of creating a Wallingford-inspired drawing for every letter of the alphabet from Agatha Christie to Zebra Crossing. Ms. Cross describes herself as a lifelong artist, but took it up as a full-time career 6 or 7 years ago, and now sells her work online and at craft stalls and markets throughout the year. The Wallingford alphabet was inspired by a Plymouth artist, A to Z of the Devon City, and took a lot of brainstorming to find 26 alphabetical subjects with all of Wallingford's most important events, traditions, and locations represented. Miss Cross said, "I wrote a great big list with multiple items for every letter and then gradually committed to them. But I was really struggling with the letters I, N, and U. And I asked the town on a Facebook page and they came up with so many ideas. It was brilliant. It was like a sort of hive mind. I got so many ideas from people. Some of them are hard to draw, especially the events ones, but I love that so many of these things which are happening rather than buildings. In the alphabet is Bunkfest, the Pancake Race, Vehicle Rally, and landmarks like the Castle, the Corn Exchange, under E, and St. Leonard's Church. The Wallingford alphabet had a warm reception from visitors to the Town Hall Craft Fair on Saturday." Ms. Cross said, "I came from animal drawing and painting. That was always my grounding, and I still love doing it. But during COVID, I started to draw more buildings and towns because we were stuck where we were. I found my own way of enjoying that, especially using ink pen with those lovely clean lines and playing a bit with perspectives. It's a fun, quirky way of doing it. You've got to find a way of making it speak to you, of making it something you really enjoy." Her next project will be the mammoth challenge of an Oxford alphabet with its massive landmarks, traditions, events and history. Miss Cross will exhibit works for sale at market and craft events in the run-up to Christmas, next at the traditional craft fair in Abingdon this week. Prints and other products featuring her work are available via her Etsy shop, Giant Mousy. And there's a picture of Claire holding up her Wallingford alphabet and also some of the pictures she's created for it.
Five finance questions to ask yourself before you retire. Whether giving up work is a dream in the distant future or right round the corner, planning is essential. Retirement opens doors to exciting prospects like travel, hobbies, and more quality time with loved ones, but thinking about all the financial decisions around it can feel overwhelming. In the lead-up to giving up work for good, questions around pension pots, annuities and tax become increasingly important, and tackling these less exciting details now will enable you to enjoy the fun stuff later without the added stress. To help make the transition smoother, we enlisted the help of Robert Cochrane, retirement expert at Scottish Widows, who has outlined five essential financial questions to ask yourself before stepping into this next chapter of life. 1. Should I combine my pension pots? Track down any lost pensions by using the government's pension tracing tool and consider if you should combine them into one so it's easier to manage. It could save you money too, says Cochrane. I would also recommend visiting PensionWise, the government free service for over 55s. 2. How much state pension am I entitled to and when is it due to kick in? Look at when your state pension is due to come in and how much you're on track to get, advises Cochrane. The HMRC app is really good for this. It tells you on the homepage when your pension is due to start and what you're on track to get. 3. What type of retirement lifestyle can I realistically expect? The Pensions and Lifetime Savings Association, now called Pensions UK, created something called the Three Retirement Living Standard Profiles, Minimum, Moderate and Comfortable, and they're based on expenditure in retirement, explains Cochrane. It takes into account factors like how frequently you're going to replace your car, the type of holidays you want to go on, broadband costs and how much you spend on presents. These standards have been set on an individual level and a couple level and are much more achievable on a couple level. According to the Pensions UK website, the minimum living standard is set at £13,400 per year for a single person and £21,600 for a couple. A moderate standard of living requires £31,700 for one person and £43,900 for two, while a comfortable lifestyle is defined as needing £43,900 for an individual and £60,600 for a couple. There are various tools on the Pensions UK website where you can pick the kind of retirement that you want and then see which one you're actually on track for. 4. Do I know the tax implications of retiring? There are a number of different ways you can access your pension savings, and there are tax implications for each of these. One of the most common mistakes people make is not thinking about tax enough. Since pension freedom has been introduced, people have been accessing their money earlier and have been taking out lump sums of money more often. Most people accessing their pensions at 55 years old will be able to take out 25% of their pension tax-free. But if you take it out as income all in one go, you maximise the tax you have to pay. So I would strongly encourage people to know what the tax implications are before they start taking any money out. 5. Do I want a pension annuity? If so, what type? An annuity is a guaranteed income for life and it's an irreversible decision. So once you make that decision, you've got to stick by it. There are a whole host of different types of annuity with all kinds of guarantees, but one of the most popular, which pays the highest levels of income, will be on a single life basis with no guarantees. Despite the popularity of this, Cochrane stresses that it's not necessarily always the best type to get, particularly if you're in a couple. This is because on average, women live longer than men, and men traditionally have bigger pension pots. So if a man goes and takes out a single basic annuity for the highest possible income he can get with no guarantees, when he dies, his spouse will get nothing from that fund. So it's particularly important for couples to talk to each other about this. Are you willing to forego what is usually a really small amount of initial income to have a guarantee of an income for your loved one upon the death of the first spouse?
And now the sports page. Boss welcomes a point in a draw after poor goals. Gary Rowett has expressed his pleasure at Oxford United's point against the playoff-chasing Millwall after Placetta's 96-minute goal equaliser clinched a draw at the Kassam Stadium. Cameron Branigan scored his second goal in a week to cancel out Tenno Ballo's early opener with a lovely swept finish into the top corner from the edge of the Lions' penalty area. Alec Neil's men retook the lead halfway through the second period when Jake Cooper tapped into an open net before the Polish international Placetta struck home late on to secure a valuable point against their visitors from London. A bitty game saw a dramatic ending as the Ewes boss conveyed his thoughts. "It's quite a nice feeling at least to get something out of the game late on. I felt as though we just about deserved it. If you're Millwall and you're 2-1 up in the 96th minute, of course you're going to be disappointed if you don't get all 3 points. I thought they started the game slightly better than we did. Tough conditions and both teams made it quite bitty. You can see from our reaction, it was really pleasing at that point to get something out of the game. I felt overall, I don't think there was a lot to separate the two teams. I think a draw would have been a fair result, but of course they'll feel a little bit aggrieved. After starting the game slowly, the Yellows started to apply pressure, but the second period proved tough to get a hold. Perseverance proved the key, though, with the late winner rewarding their efforts. What I would say about this group is they'll keep going, they keep pressurising and they keep trying. Sometimes we lack a little bit of quality and composure, but that's what we are and that is where we are in the sort of football world. But we kept fighting and it's a great finish in the end. I think moments earlier Cameron looked like he might have scored another one of his trademark free kicks and it's a great save. And then the ball just dropped to Placetta moments later and he struck it really well in the bottom corner. Nice to get a point out of it. Placetta's strike was his second of the season after the stunner at Bristol City earlier in the campaign. The winger started to add goals. I think the difference between in the top half of the division and the bottom half sometimes is just that little extra bit of quality in those moments. In Bristol City, he scored brilliant goals. He had a little moment earlier in the game, but lacked a little bit of composure, so it was nice for him to find it late on. The Ewes climbed one place to 18th in the Championship with 13 points.
Now we've got some forthcoming events. And on Thursday the 6th of November and also Thursday the 13th of November, there's the digital helper drop-in between 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at Wallingford Library. And it's a free, friendly, one-to-one help with a knowledgeable volunteer. It's free but booking advised, and book by calling 01865 815193 or email wallingford.library@oxfordshire.gov.uk. And on Saturday the 8th of November, the Town Council Councillor Surgery Session, and that's between 10 a.m. to 12 noon at St Mary Lamore Church in Wallingford. And Wallingford Town Council has introduced a series of councillor surgery sessions, providing an opportunity for residents to meet with their local councillors, share their thoughts, and raise any concerns about the town. These informal drop-in sessions are open to all Wallingford residents. Councillors will be available to listen to questions, feedback, and ideas, as well as to discuss ongoing projects and plans in the town. And then on Saturday, the 15th of November, there's Cholsey Repair Cafe, 10 a.m. to 12:45, and that's at Cholsey Pavilion, Station Road, Cholsey. Cholsey Repair Cafe is a voluntary initiative to reduce waste, share repair skills, and enhance our village community. We try to prevent useful items being thrown away. How does it work? You bring a broken or worn item to us, and we do our best to help you mend it or advise what else can be done. You pay for parts, and we hope that you will make a donation towards our operating costs.
And on Saturday, the 15th of November, the Town Council, Wallingford Town Council, have another session at St Mary Lemoore Church from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. Will there be further surgery discussing any problems people have? On Saturday, the 15th of November, again at 7:30 p.m. at St Helen's Church, Benson, there's a concert called Autumn Fancies, and this concert is in aid of Music for Autism, and the tickets are £10 and are available on the door, and they include light refreshments. Again on Saturday, this time at St John's Church, Abingdon, the Orchestra of St John's, the Orchestra of St John's, Abingdon, is at Dorchester Abbey, playing at 7 p.m. and they are playing Ravel and Stravinsky with Geneva Canner Mason, the Mother Goose Suite, 1908, originally written as a piano duet and later orchestrated as a delightful and enchanting work that brings to life the magical world of fairy tales. The piano concerto in G, jazzy, virtuoso, fast-moving, shows the influence of Ravel's time in America in 1927 and 1928. The tickets are £17.50 to £30. Free tickets available for NHS workers and for the disabled. Please email admin@osj.org.uk for information about the tickets. On Monday the 17th of November, the Wallingford Social Group meet at Wallingford Library from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30, and this is organised by My Vision Oxfordshire. This is a perfect opportunity to meet other visually impaired people, have some great conversations, enjoy some hot drinks and snacks. We look forward to meeting you there. And if you have any questions or concerns, please contact us at info@myvision, that's capital M, capital V, .org.uk or telephone 01865 725 595.
And on the Tuesday, the 18th of November, the South Oxfordshire Christmas Fair from 9:30 to 4 p.m. And it's being held at the Oxfordshire Golf Club, which is off the 329 on the way to Tame. South Oxfordshire Christmas Fair will showcase the very best of our makers, growers and artisans, inspiring gifts, community spirit and seasonal joy. The magical shopping experience will also raise funds for two local charities, Seesaw and Styleacre. Tickets are available on the door and will be £7.50. At Wednesday, the 19th of November at 7 p.m. in St Mary Lemoore Church in Wallingford, Fascinating Talks. In the Fascinating Talks series, Professor Jonathan Conlon is giving a talk entitled Immigration, Detention and a View from the Inside. Entrance to the talk is free, but donations would be accepted.
Hello, I'm Kate. I'm reading from Round and About, and we're starting with the editorial from Liz Nichols. This year's Remembrance Sunday feels specially poignant because my grandmother, Kate, turns 100 on the 8th of November, a whole century of life and memories stretching back to wartime Britain. As the daughter of a Liverpool publican, she recalls the air raid sirens, direct hits, and the city neighbours who pulled together through the hardest of times. Listening to her stories reminds me that remembrance is living history. Remembrance is not just about the past. It's about holding these stories and carrying them forward with gratitude. We owe so much to this generation, and I am grateful to hear her tales. And this article is an excerpt from something written by Wild Oxfordshire, The Importance of Soil. Seasonal spotlight. Winter can be quite a harsh time of year for much of our wildlife, but for some species it can offer a bit of respite from the harsher, colder climates further north. Winter is a fantastic time to see many bird species that we won't see in summer, such as redwings and field pheasants. Birds such as starlings start to flock, forming impressive murmurations in the sky. Why not visit your local nature reserve on a winter's day and see what new species you can find? The Yellow Wagtail Partnership. We wanted to bring a bit of colour to this month by mentioning one of our main projects is the Yellow Wagtail Partnership. The yellow wagtail is not a species one would think about at this time of year, as by now they will be back in the wintering grounds in sunny West Africa. Wild Oxfordshire have partnered with Earth Trust and Church Farm Partnership and Lower Farm to collectively manage 4 miles of wet grassland along the River Thames from Clifton Hampden to Shillingford. The aim of the project is to sustainably manage these grasslands for the benefit of wildlife, including the yellow wagtail, but also in a way that is economically beneficial for the partnering businesses. However, this project is not just about the yellow wagtail. We want to increase the plant and insect diversity and abundance as well. This in turn will increase the amount of food available for many species of bird, including house martins, swifts, snipe and lapwings. World Soil Day. The 5th of December is World Soil Day, held annually to highlight the importance of healthy soil and its sustainable management. Soil is vital for plant growth and therefore food production. Healthy soils filter and store water, reducing the risk of flooding. Soil can even help mitigate against climate change by storing carbon from the atmosphere. In addition, soil provides a habitat for many different species, including bacteria, fungi, worms and invertebrates. It is estimated that a single teaspoon of healthy soil can contain more living organisms than there are people on Earth. That's over 7 billion microbes. We can all do our bit to support healthy soils. This can be in your garden through reducing the amount of chemicals you apply, composting and mulching, or turning your lawn into a meadow. We can also do our bit by supporting farmers who are working to improve their soil quality through sustainable farming practices. When you can, buy organic or directly from the farmer. Cholsey Repair Cafe will run its last session of 2025 from 10 a.m. to 12:45 p.m. on Saturday the 15th of November at the Cholsey Pavilion. You can take all manner of household items, bikes, tools and electrical items and get help with giving them a new lease of life. Volunteer fixers offer their services and advice without charge, but donations towards running costs are welcome and any replacement parts have to be paid for. The scheme will continue into 2026 and runs regularly on the third Saturday of odd-numbered months. There is further information on the Cholsey Repair Cafe website and you are welcome to come along. Well done to the residents and team at Rushcourt Care Home in Wallingford, who poured weeks of creativity, skill and imagination into their Agatha Christie entry for the Elizabeth Finn Holmes Into Home Scarecrow Challenge. The creativity, teamwork and detective-inspired flair paid off as the Rushcourt team were crowned winners, says operations manager Helen Grice. Their success was down to some amazing teamwork, with residents having fun, getting crafty and sharing their joy with the local community. Mrs. Christie does not stand alone. She is joined in reception by Hercule Poirot and Miss Marple. Guests and families were invited to follow a special mystery trail through the home with a playful whodunit twist for all to enjoy. Residents also visited the Agatha Christie bench and statue in Wallingford Town Centre, proudly showing off their straw-filled doppelganger. Rushcourt Care Home is part of the Elizabeth Finn Holmes family, providing high quality care in beautiful surroundings near Wallingford. The Christmas Tree Festival at St Helen's Church in Benson will feature creations on the theme of Christmas traditions by local groups, organisations and businesses. The festival will open at 5 p.m. on Friday the 28th of November with a short informal carol service for all ages with participation from the village school. This will finish at about 5:30 p.m. in good time to go on to other activities in the village. Over the weekend, the church will open from 10 till 4 p.m. on Saturday the 29th of November and again on Monday the 1st of December. Seasonal refreshments will be served. Look out for posters and social media nearer the time. All aboard. Wallingford Accessible Boat Club, WABC, has enjoyed an amazing year, smashing all records. Charity Chairman MBE John Jenkins invites you to join the volunteers. What a year it's been for Wallingford Accessible Boat Club. The 2025 season has seen record-breaking achievements across the board. Passenger numbers rose by 18% to just under 500, while wheelie boat trips reached nearly 100, making it our best season yet. Behind these incredible numbers is our dedicated team of volunteers who operated 8 or 9 boat trips 6 days a week throughout the season. Their commitment and enthusiasm have been nothing short of inspirational. Midway through the season, the team pulled off a major milestone, relocating our operating base from Benson to a fantastic new facility at Riverside in the heart of Wallingford. Despite the challenges of retraining and adjusting to the new base, services continued smoothly, a testament to the team's hard work and adaptability. This growing demand for WABC's inclusive river experiences highlights the importance of our mission, enabling disabled and less mobile people in Oxfordshire to enjoy the river, just like anyone else. As our popularity grows, we're on the lookout for more volunteers to join our vibrant, friendly team. Whether you'd like to skipper, crew, or help with marketing and fundraising, we'd love to hear from you. Full training is provided to RYA standards. Come and enjoy fun days on the river while making a real difference. As you can see, we've stepped into Christmas this month. Dame Mary Berry will be the special guest at Maggie's Christmas Artisan Market in aid of Maggie's Cancer Centre, Oxford, at the end of this month at the Coaching Barn in Little Stoke, OX106AX. It runs from 6 to 9 p.m. on Thursday the 27th of November. There's an exclusive market preview with fizz, canapes and live music. Pre-book at £20 per person, which includes free entry to the market on Friday. 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. on Friday the 28th, pop by, book or £5 on the door, to shop for original gifts, homemade lunch and cakes, book signings. Talks and demos are £20 per person and include free entry to the market. Dame Mary Berry will sign copies of her new book, Mary 90, My Very Best Recipes. Her daughter Bells Berry recently launched a recipe book with Mariella Fostrup called Menalicious, Eat Your Way to a Better Menopause. She will also sign copies. You can also enjoy talks from Claire Foster, Gardens editor of House and Garden magazine, and Rachel Siegfried of Green and Gorgeous. For tickets or queries, please email oxfordfundraising@maggies.org.
Okay, so that concludes our recording of the paper this week. Thank you for listening and goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye. Bye.